Hi, and welcome to Tea and Strumpets, a Regency Romance Review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey.
And it's that time of year. We're in the holiday spirit.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening?
Yes. Oh my gosh. And I'm looking forward to the holidays this year. We already talked about that in our last episode about Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. So how about you? Are you looking forward to Christmas?
I am. However, all holidays this year are surrounded by the one problem of don't kill grandma.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that song Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is like, well, okay, I'm not going to go there. But anyhow.
But 90-year-old grandmother like had to move in, you know, to the parents' house. So she's close by now, which is great. And it's like, holidays, yay, but also no one wants to kill grandma.
No, for sure. And it's so hard right now, like just to know what's safe. And even when you do what you think is the safest thing, there's just so many variables, right? And that's
exactly.
You can only account for so many. So anyhow, stay healthy, wear a mask, wash your hands, and you know, think about your vulnerable family members.
Exactly.
So on a lighter note, I wanted to ask you, like, when you think about Christmas, what's your, like, favorite Christmas time treat?
My favorite Christmas time treat? Well, my favorite, like, savory treat is, like, a nice prime, like, leg of lamb.
Ooh.
That's, like, our Christmas Day dinner. You know, like we eat lamb pretty often. Like as a kid, though, lamb was like special Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
And then like because my husband really loves it, he's like lamb for Christmas dinner, which is like supreme. Last year, because we do have some family members who don't eat lamb, we had a lamb and a ham, you know, and I was a big fan of both things. So that's like a savory treat. And then another one, which actually I haven't made in a while, and I think I want to make them again. So my grandma had us for Christmas one year because we used to go visit my grandma in Maryland every few years for Christmas. And she had us do like forget-me cookies, which are little meringue cookies.
Ooh.
And we would put like some orange zest in it and like some cranberries and like chocolate chips and nuts.
Yum.
And then so you whip up the meringue, and then you set them in the oven, which is preheated, and then you turn the oven off, and you leave them until then, like the next day for them to dry out.
Ooh.
And they're just really tasty. They're like light and delicate, but they're nice and chewy in the center. And I think that's like a favorite Christmas time treat for me when it comes to sweet treats. Like, I just love it.
I was thinking about this too. And it's funny because my family's tradition, and I think I talked about this in one of our episodes last year, my family is like one holiday traditional thing is pumpkin pie, and we have our family recipe for it. But like, mm-hmm. So we do that for like anywhere from November to, you know, the end of the year. And sometimes mm-hmm. for our birthdays, like my brother and sister often ask for pumpkin pie for their birthdays. But I was thinking that something that I haven't had in a long time is gingerbread cookies. And I love gingerbread cookies. And my best friend's family used to go nuts around the holidays. And so I'd always go over there to make cookies. And they would make like 7 types of cookies. It would be like a weekend of just cookie making. And gingerbread was one of them. And it's so delicious. And so I think I'm definitely going to try this year to do some gluten-free gingerbread cookies because I've never made them myself. I only did it as a kid with my friend's family. So I think that's going to be my endeavor. And that treat just like says this time of year to me, you know?
I think that's a great thing to do. And I think that with gluten-free, I think that will go pretty hand in hand because like gingerbread's not supposed to rise very much.
No.
You know, like it's meant to be a thinner, crispier cookie. So I think you can definitely like get that going with the gluten-free.
Yeah. And generally, I find that cookies do pretty well. I think when you're trying to make like making puff pastry out of gluten-free is like it's just it's not going to happen. Even making like scones or English muffins or things like that, it's just because you don't get the rise without the gluten, it's not so good. But things like cookies, that don't need a big rise, or, you know, you have to find the right types of recipes to adapt.
Yes, agreed.
And then you have better success. So enough about my dietary restrictions. But the reason that I brought up treats and Christmas time treats is because the book that we're reading today, in fact, the whole anthology that this novella is in, all features a Christmas time treat. And I guess it's not necessarily a Christmas time treat, it's a tea time treat, I would say. But we're going to talk more about that in our history fact, so we'll get back around to treats. But the book we are talking about today is the novella Meet Me in Mayfair in the Dukes Who Stole Christmas anthology, and Meet Me in Mayfair is by Tessa Dare.
Yes. So our author fact is a bit of old news, but we feel like it's still relevant. So as of June 15th, 2020, there was an update on Tessa Dare's upcoming books. And she says, "Dear readers, last week my publisher and I made the decision to postpone my two upcoming books, The Bride Bet, Girl Meets Duke, Book 4, and Love Letters from a Lord, a Spindle Cove novella. I'm sorry for any inconvenience or disappointment. I've been putting off dealing with some health issues, nothing too serious or life-threatening, no worries. And this year, my body and brain sat down like cranky toddlers and refused to cooperate until I pay them some attention. So I'm taking a little time off to do that, and then I'll be back to making these stories as funny, sexy, and romantic as I possibly can. As of today, I'm not sure what the new release dates will be, but I will announce them when I do. If you've pre-ordered one or both of these books, you may need to place another pre-order after the date has been changed. Thank you so much for your understanding and patience. I'm so grateful for my wonderful readers. Tessa." And this was current as of September 2020.
Yes. Peek behind the curtain. We are recording this early, so we're still in the end of September, so there could be an update with the dates somewhere between when we're recording and when this airs, and we will be sure to update you guys about that in our 21 historical romances we just can't wait for in 2021 episode. So
it seems so long from now, and yet the last one seems so recent.
Yeah, this year was a weird time vacuum, huh?
Yeah. Anywho, so history fact.
Let's do it. So our history fact this week is about shortbread cookies. They are the cookies that are featured throughout this whole anthology in every story. So,
unfortunately, the shortbread in this anthology are all terrible.
In this,
but we're talking about good shortbread.
Yeah. In this novella, the shortbread is burnt and terrible, but shortbread is a type of cookie with a high butter content. The traditional recipe is 1 part sugar, 2 parts butter, and 3 parts flour. Some recipes use a 1-1-1 ratio, and there are variations in between, and later recipes added eggs. But it's been called the ancestor of all butter cookies. The original shortbreads were made with oatmeal. The more elegant white flour came later and lightened the cookie. The addition of rice flour gives shortbread a grainy, crumbly texture, while cornstarch and corn flour will give it a more dense texture. Shortbread originated in Scotland, where cookies are called biscuits, as we know, in medieval times. Shortbread may have been made as early as the 12th century, but its invention, or at least the refinement to its current form, is often attributed to Mary, Queen of Scots, in the 16th century. She had a team of French chefs who had the time, labor, and ingredients to perfect the recipes. Shortbread recipes first appear in cookbooks of the time, although origination often precedes the first reference in print by a significant number of years. While shortbread is a famous accompaniment to tea, and of course coffee, milk, and hot chocolate, the cookies are also served with wine and champagne, and they are terrific accompaniments to many other desserts.
Or just being dessert themselves.
Absolutely. So why shortbread? A triangle or petticoat tail was the original shortbread shape, baked in a round in a round and scored. It was decorated with fork tines. There are two different explanations for the name of the cookie. Some sources cite the crumbly or short texture of the product. Others attribute the name to its high percentage of shortening or butter. The word shortening refers to any fat. Butteriness is an important quality in shortbread, so much so that in 1921, the British government legislated that a product called shortbread must get at least 51% of its fat from real butter. Outside of the UK, however, there is no such requirement. Check the label to ensure yourself of an authentic shortbread experience. And
that's like Germans and their beer.
Seriously, or the French and champagne.
Oh, yeah, and the French champagne.
Yeah. And there is actually a shortbread recipe in the back of this anthology, and one of my book club members made it. And as I said, I can't eat gluten, but I heard it was delicious.
I mean, really, shortbread's really hard to mess up. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, butter, sugar, flour. It's
my personal favorite shortbread recipe comes from the Joy of Cooking cookbook.
Uh-huh. I have that one.
The Joy of Cooking has a shortbread recipe, and it's my favorite one that I've ever used. It's super easy. It's super, like, straightforward, and it comes out delicious.
Oh, my gosh. Well, maybe I'll be trying that along with my gingerbread, because why not?
Why not? All right. So today we have some tropes, and our main tropes are hidden identity and the Hail Mary.
Yep. And our main characters are Miss Louisa Ward and James, the Duke of Thorndale. All right. So shall we get into it?
We shall. The hopes and future of the Ward family improving their circumstances in the immediate future rest firmly upon the eldest daughter Louisa's shoulders. And most unfortunately, Louisa only has one night to change their stars. Their family has been evicted from their beloved townhome by the new Duke of Thorndale, and the only way they won't have to be exiled or move to the Isle of Jersey in a fortnight is if she can finally bring a man up to scratch who is deep in the pockets enough to pay off her father's debts.
Her father had had an understanding with the previous Duke, who was his friend and simply never called in the debt on any rent to the house. For years and years. But the new Duke has done so and has refused to meet or discuss any arrangement of payment other than the full payment or their eviction immediately.
So Louisa has just one more ball that she can attend and hopes to charm a rich man there. She's handsome enough, but there's just one problem. She has this unladylike quality of speaking her mind and appearing educated. So this evening, she's determined to stay quiet and demure.
However, when she arrives at the ball hosted by her friend Fiona Carville's parents, her plans are dashed. Fiona informs Louisa that she's eloping with her father's steward's son this evening, and she needs Louisa to take all her dances for her and tell all that Fiona has retired with a headache so that her parents don't hear about it. Louisa hasn't told Fiona about her family's troubles, and she knows she must support her friend. So she agrees. But she is pretty upset, for Fiona only ever accepted dances from the least eligible gentleman, since her heart was entertained elsewhere. Louisa peruses the dance card in dismay until she comes across one name and doesn't know if her eyes deceive her, for her nemesis, the Duke of Thorndale, is promised for the before-dinner waltz.
Meanwhile, James, the newly minted Duke of Thorndale, is busy being miserable. He hated London, he hated balls, he hated meddling matchmaking mamas, and he just wanted to be done with his business in London and headed back to the beauty and solace of Yorkshire. It didn't matter how much he insisted he was in London only for his presentation to the court and to tie up some business, young debutantes were thrown in his path, all vying very insistently for his title. He was never supposed to have been the Duke. His brother had been groomed for the role, but now here he was, and he felt entitled to attend the ball of his distant relations, and to dance once with his distant cousin, Fiona, at the very least.
However, when it's time to dance, he can't find her anywhere, and instead, a striking young woman he doesn't know approaches him. Quote, James couldn't quite identify the source of her loveliness. Then again, where was the beauty of Yorkshire Moor? Hiding in a patch of sky? Behind a craggy rock or beneath a bit of heather? No, the effect came from all of it, all together. The way it made his chest expand. The way it scrubbed all worries from his mind. The way it took his breath away.
However, once James hears that Louisa is to take Fiona's place, he immediately turns cold and releases her from her obligation, blatantly telling her he sees through the ruse. Louisa, however, insists they must dance and that she doesn't renege on a promise to a friend. So finally they do waltz and trade barbs, Louisa admitting to him that she wants nothing to do with him. And with that statement, James's interest is piqued.
Louisa is fuming through the waltz, having finally met the cold man who has so callously thrown her family from their home. It's quite vexing that he's so handsome, but at least his behavior so far has assured her of his terrible character. However, once James realizes that Louisa wants nothing to do with him, he is too intrigued to let her go and admits that this is his first honest conversation he's had with anyone since becoming the Duke. By now, the ballroom has emptied for dinner, and the two of them are left arguing on the dance floor as the servants tidy. Regardless, Louisa is still angry and tries to go in to dinner without him, although he grabs her hand and requests to accompany her. And then, in tugging her hand away, Louisa turns smack into a footman removing a punch bowl and is summarily sloshed with a torrent of red down her white gown.
Horrified, James insists he must escort her home. Horrified and dejected at the loss of her chance to save her family, Louisa assents. They go to the stables and find his coach, but it turns out to be occupied by his coachman and a lady of the night. While James didn't think he could feel worse, he now goes from horrified to mortified, but Louisa just laughs.
At this point, the whole night has gone from a terror to a farce, and Louisa has a new idea. She will walk home. It's not far, and she doesn't need an escort, so James is off the hook. Of course, he won't let that happen, and in fact, Louisa was counting on that. So the two set off on a walk through Mayfair.
Louisa, however, has withheld her address, and she tells James that she intends to show him the very best of her neighborhood, so maybe he won't be so judgmental against all of London. He begrudgingly assents, and the two begin their adventure. The night is quiet and calm, and the magic of the evening and season and the chemistry between the two sparkles. They go down all of Louisa's favorite streets, procure some brandy to warm up from a club, sing a Christmas carol when they are discovered on someone's stoop to great applause and a slice of pudding, and make snow angels in Hyde Park. By the time the clock strikes 5 a.m., Louisa has found herself half in love with James, and he's already head over heels for her. And the kiss they shared didn't hurt their connection either.
Louisa, though, is quite torn over her deception and realizes that she doesn't want James to deliver her home and speak to her father to clear things up, as he promised. So when they do arrive near her home, she tries to get him to leave, but is spotted by her sister out the window. Once inside and in the kitchen for a spot of tea, Louisa calls him Mr. James in a further attempt to hide his identity, but eventually he introduces himself formally to her father.
When he says his title, her whole family is stunned silent, until her younger sister starts celebrating and says, "Oh, Louisa, you've done it! You've convinced him not to take our house!" James, of course, is confused, but realizes that the house he's in must be one of the properties he owns. He and Louisa had spoken earlier about them. He had insisted he needed to sell them off to help his farmer tenants fund drainage ditches, and she had argued that perhaps he also had a responsibility to the tenants in his London properties. But regardless, he is livid and cold at learning this fact. He feels betrayed and believes her motives were purely this, and that Louisa is no better than he believed when they first danced.
Furious, he admits to her that he had even considered offering for her hand and storms out of the house, lamenting his bad fortune. How had he not seen it when she had come to him under false circumstances to begin with, insisting that her friend had a headache? Now he knew her to be a schemer, albeit a better one than the usuals.
But the next morning, when he visits his cousins, the Carvilles, to apologize for his early departure, James learns of Fiona's elopement and Louisa's involvement in covering it up. And he starts to think about the whole evening with Louisa and all the things she said, and realizes she had been the most truthful person he'd met and that their connection had been real. The only thing to do now was figure out how to proceed.
On Christmas morning, Louisa and her family are enjoying their festivities when a letter arrives for her. Although she has never seen one before, she is pretty sure what she has opened is the deed to the townhouse with her name on it. And it has been delivered by James, who tells her that he is there to speak with her father once they have spoken. No, he's not here to ask for her hand, but for permission to court her if she's amenable. Quote, "A visit to Lady Carville sent me straight the very next morning. When she told me of Fiona's elopement, I knew at once that I'd been an ass. I wanted to come back and see you straight away, but I forced myself to wait." Why? Because it would have been too soon, too rushed, too muddled with questions. If a proper courtship revealed we didn't suit one another, you'd have feared letting down your family. And as much as I hate to admit it, I'd have always wondered if it was the house you truly wanted or me. He fidgeted with his hat. It doesn't speak well of my character that I'm so quick to suspect others' motives, but for the longest time, I was rather on my own. And then suddenly I'm a duke and everyone scrambles for my notice. It's too easy to believe people want what they can get from me rather than wanting me.
And so our story ends with the promise of courtship to determine if they do suit. But of course they do. So the epilogue is their wedding and their wedding night, where James begs Louisa to promise him they'll make bushels of babies because he wants a big family.
Ugh. My heart is so warmed right now. Just remembering this story, and I can't wait to talk about it more with you. So shall we adjourn to the parlor?
We shall.
All right, everyone. So today we have some more Christmas novella recommendations. Woo-hoo! Because it's the season and these are so like cheery and heartwarming. And and we chose a novella this week, right? That was from an anthology that came out a few years ago. And there's a new one out this year.
There's always a new one.
I know. So, Kelsey, do you want to tell us all about it?
Yes. So, the newest anthology that's out for this Christmas is A Very Highland Christmas by Jennifer Ashley, Woo! Tanya Ann Crosby, Catherine Levesque, Kerrigan Byrne, Darcy Burke, and Eliza Knight. And if you don't know, we've reviewed books by Jennifer Ashley, and we've spoken to Kerrigan Byrne, and fabulous.
Yes.
It's an enchanting Christmas in the Highlands with some of your favorite historical romance authors. It's Christmas Eve, 1747, and the Highlands are snowy. In the village of Kelvine, north of Tay Forest, along a road that leads straight into Inverness, the only tavern in town is packed to the rafters with travelers. 8 months after the disastrous defeat at Culloden, the people haven't recovered, nor has the land, and it's a bad winter. But inside the tavern known as Balthazar's Inn, the magic that is Christmas is about to happen. A blustery innkeeper, his sensitive daughter, and a cast of unique characters passing through the careworn tavern will bring you six captivating stories of reflection, joy, and enthrallment that is the very spirit of the holiday season.
I am excited. I have that one pre-ordered. As I said, it's earlier in the year, but I think it comes out very soon. And Kerrigan's story is like, I think it's called like The Ghost of Christmas Past or something like that. And so it's got a ghost in it, guys. I really am excited to read.
Ghost. Yeah, very excited.
I am excited to read it. I was like, oh, this sounds so good. And some of the others too, like all of the little snippets. We don't have time to read them all, but there are a lot of fun ones. And I love that tavern idea.
I love it. I love when stories have like, when it's an anthology and all the people like are intertwined through all the other stories. Like,
so
I love
cool.
That. I love seeing those authors work together with similar characters and like have them play off each other. But also like Jennifer Ashley, for those who don't know, that's The Madness of Lordy and Mackenzie and all the other Mackenzie series, which we haven't reviewed here, but I read like all of them. And oh my God, every single one of them is amazing.
I've read most of these authors, so I'm excited to dive into this one. I think it's going to be some nice holiday reading for me. And we have one more to tell you guys about today, which may be a full-length book. I'm not 100% sure about the size of this one. Haven't quite figured that out yet because it is also not out as of the time of recording. But it is called A Mistletoe Vow to Lord Lovell, and it is by Joanna Johnson. And this one says, will their vows last a lifetime, not just for Christmas? Abandoned by her husband and society because her father was a slave, Honora Blake will never rely on anyone again, until dashing Lord Lovell breaks the news that she is a widow and penniless and insists she spend Christmas with him and his pregnant ward. Beneath the mistletoe, passion flares between Honora and Isaac. Then childbirth places his ward's life in jeopardy, and these strangers suddenly face marriage to protect the baby. So that one sounds like quite...
Wow, that's a lot of things happening.
Yes, but we have a black heroine there. And so I am always really excited to see, you know, more diverse books coming out. So really wanted to highlight that. And that is also pre-ordered for me. So I am going to be checking that out soon. And of course, we will link to both of those in our show notes.
And if you have a book recommendation, we would love to hear from you. If you have an inclusive author you love, or just a book you just need to shout from the rooftops, we want to hear about it and share it here in the parlor. So if you have a book you'd like to recommend, let us know through our email, romancepod@gmail.com.
And if you're looking for anywhere else to find us, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets, Facebook/TN Strumpets, Pinterest the same, and YouTube by searching our name.
And if you really want to be in the know, sign up for email notifications on our website. If you subscribe, you'll be the first to know what we're reading each month. Plus, you'll get all sorts of extras, including exclusive content from each of the authors who join us on the podcast. Our website is romancepod.com, and there you can find episodes, more information about us, and other resources. So take a look.
And finally, if you're feeling in the holiday spirit, we would love nothing more than if you would consider giving us a review. Reviews on Apple Podcasts or Facebook or anywhere else you can review us really help other listeners find the podcast. And of course, word of mouth is also one of the best ways that podcasts get found. So perhaps if you like what you're hearing, we would love for you to spread the word.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Will from the Big Gay Fiction Podcast. We're proud to be part of the Frolic Podcast Network.
Our show is for avid readers and passionate fans of gay romance fiction. Each week, we bring you exclusive author interviews, book recommendations, and explore the latest in gay pop culture. We've talked to a wide range of authors, such as Casey McQuiston, Adriana Herrera, Becky Albertalli, and Suzanne Brockman. TJ Klune has appeared a number of times on the show to tell listeners about his epic tales featuring werewolves, wizards, and drag queens.
New episodes are available every Monday. You can find us at biggayfictionpodcast.com and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We hope you'll join us soon. Until then, keep turning those pages and keep reading.
So here we are. We get to talk about a Tessa Dare novella.
Excellent. I thought this one was so cute.
This one just brings a smile to my face. We've talked, we called Courtney Milan's novella the perfect novella, and I stand by that. But this one gets pretty close. It's such a short little snippet, and it's so lovely.
It is. And I think what really makes it, which of course was the thing that we couldn't talk about the most, which was just kind of summarized very much, but like their walk through Mayfair is really just like the best thing ever.
It's so great. And I know I condensed it to a bullet point. I really did. I was like, how can I adequately summarize this? And I was like, no, I'm going to just like make it really tiny and we can talk more about it together, but also be like, just go read it. Like, just go read it. It's so good. Oh.
It really is. And like, I love it. And the whole, like, caroling on the stoop as a total just like, what are you doing on the stoop? It's like, and singing.
Yes, I love that too. And James starts it. It's so cute. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I think my – yeah, just – I love the storyline. And I love – I mean, it's got all the classic Tessa Dare humor in the lines. And it's such a complete story. Right? From beginning to end. And then when James comes back, it isn't this like bow on it, cherry on top. It's like, it's more perfect than that because it's more realistic. He's like, I realized I was an ass, but I also realized that I really liked you and we should figure out if we suit rather than just doing something off of a crazy night, right? Like,
oh, agreed. And I love it. And I thought that was so perfect when he comes back and it's like, oh my God, this is a deed. What do you mean by this? And he's like, I would like to ask your permission to, and ask your father for permission to court you, just court you. Like, I think that you and I both can agree we need some time to get to know each other a little bit better.
Yep.
And like, we'll go from there.
So cute.
And I just like, and I love it because like, it's a little bit more realistic, but like in a good way.
In such a good way, because if he had come back and he had said, will you marry me? I don't know if I would have had the same like.
Agreed, because his reasons for it were so perfect. He's like, well, I'm afraid of people not liking me for me. And I would always wonder if you had married me for the house or what. So like this way, we both get to feel comfortable with it and you don't have to worry about losing the house because I don't want you to feel pressured. And
yep.
And I love his comment about her being the most honest person he'd met because she's like, the whole time she's like, I really just have this issue with speaking my mind and I can't stop it. Like, I just can't.
Yeah, I really like that both of the characters feel really developed. You know who they are from the get-go. And maybe that's a good segue into talking about our hero and our heroine and our opinions about mm-hmm. them. So what – I mean, I just felt like I said, both of them were such fully realized creations. Like they were just so mm-hmm. – you knew who they were immediately. Like you get this moment of Louisa with her sisters in the beginning and you get this information that the kind of the weight of her family is on her shoulders, even though they're a really loving family and they're not bitchy to her or making her feel bad, no, but
they're not shoving her into somebody's arms. Mm-mm. They're like, if you can make it happen, that would be ideal. Like, because it's like I said, they had something lined up on the Isle of Jersey.
Yeah.
Just no one wanted to go.
Nobody wanted to go to Jersey. Sorry, I'm having a Hamilton moment. But anyhow, yeah, so, but she's funny, she's smart, she's witty, and like she makes good decisions through the whole book. Like I was really, mm-hmm. I was really happy with her. So,
well, and her decision to be like, oh, well, like maybe I can convince him, like, you know, to see us as people on the walk, mm-hmm. and then being like hearing about the plight of his farmer, she's like, well, you have to think about your tenants too, but like, I don't want you to like, like, they're important too, like, you know, because we'll be fine. We have another option, but.
Yeah.
You know, like she, and then she was like, no, don't come to our house. Please don't.
Well, yeah, because she realizes, like, even though she, you know, when she first starts off the plan, she's like, okay, well, I have this Hail Mary, like, right in front of me. If mm-hmm. I can convince him to see things differently, maybe I can save my family that way, right? So yeah. She's like, I'm going to try that. And then she's like, dang it. I really, really actually like this guy. And I don't mm-hmm. want him to just think that I was just using him in that way, you know?
Exactly.
Because if it had just been a friendship thing or like a fun evening, that's one thing. But if it's another when it's like, oh, I'm really attracted to this person, you know? Mm-hmm. So it totally made sense to me. And then she tried to get rid of him and it didn't work. He kept trying.
He was persistent through the whole thing.
Yes.
And I mean, good on him. Persistence all the way.
Yes. So what would you give our heroine, Louisa?
I'm going to give a solid like 8.5.
I am going to give her a 8.5 as well. She's great. I don't know what would make her higher, but
maybe just a longer story would make her higher.
You took the words like, out of my mouth. Yeah. Because she's so great. But at the same time, like, you know, you only had so long to get to know her. This is a short mm-hmm. novella, too. This is quite short.
Yes, it's very short.
Like under 100 pages for sure.
Although it's still broken up into like 14 chapters, which is just amazing.
I know. They're so quick little morsels of shortbread. So then there's James. Oh, James.
Yes. Oh, James, the Duke that should not have been.
Yes. I loved his backstory and everything made sense. I loved how cranky he was. He had quite a quick turnaround. As soon as he realized Louisa wanted nothing to do with him, he was like, wait. You're the first like real person who said the first real thing to me. And I don't care that it's you don't want to hang out with me. I have to know more.
Well, and it's funny because like he even says like he was raised to be a gentleman farmer. Mm-hmm. But he's probably more farmer than gentleman.
Yeah.
Like he was meant to be a gentleman farmer, but he was really taught to do the farming. And he's like very much like
into it
and in like on the ground. And so being a duke to him is just so foreign. And he's like, I'm just meant to be a farmer. And then to hear her be like honest with him, he's like, wow, you're not fawning over me. Like this is what I'm used to dealing with. Like talk more.
Yes. Yeah. And he also felt really isolated and lonely by, like, you know, the quote that we shared at the end, how people wanted his title. They didn't want him. And so he already had lost, you know, his brother and a lot of his family. And so when people want, you know, just his title but don't want anything to do with him, that's like even more insult to it, right? He's lost any of the people that are important to him. And so then people are coming to him like under false pretenses. Like I can imagine that hurts more. So it was interesting. But also then he's so cute and funny because it turns out obviously like he is witty and smart and funny. And their adventure through Mayfair is hilarious. Like when he realizes like, oh no, I can't take her home because she didn't actually give me her address.
But it's just so cute because they become like these, even though they just met, they become like these two little partners in crime.
Yep.
And just like the way they play off each other and how like, you know, she'll take him one way and then he'll take her another way. And just like the way they just play off each other in that, it's just fun.
It's super fun. And he's the one who starts the Christmas Carol. Yeah, I very much loved him. So I don't know. What would you rate James?
I'm going to rate him like a solid 8.
I'll give him an 8.5. I feel like they're same level to me. Like they are both great. Like really great.
Fair. You know, could have just done with a longer book, but it might have lost something if it was a longer book. Because it's just that little snippet of Christmas loveliness.
It's so lovely. So do you have a favorite quote to share? I have one for sure.
Well, I liked all the quotes you picked, so that was a thing.
Well, shall I go first then?
Yes, please do.
So mine is while they're on their walk, and James is going to go into a club that he believes he's a member of to grab some brandy and come back out. And when they were trying to get into his carriage, and there was the carriage driver doing it with a lady in the carriage, she said the words, "Come to me, you magnificent stag." So this is kind of – this quote also harkens back to that. So while James leaves Louisa outside, he says, "If anyone or anything frightens you, shout." Shout what? He made an aimless gesture. Help, I suppose, or fire, or murder. In a pinch, James would suffice. She nodded. Come to me, you magnificent stag, it is.
I love it. And actually, I had that same one highlighted.
Sorry. Did I take that?
You stole it. But I mean, really, like, I could add another one, but it's just more just like backstory commentary. We're just going to have the same quote on this one, Lori.
I think that's fine. It's such a great quote.
I love it because I can just see her solemnly nodding and be like, come to me, my magnificent stag. It is. I got it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's such classic Tessa Dare, like, brilliant writing as usual. Like, just the humor that's infused even in the solemn moments are good too, which, you know, we're not quoting here, but she's so good at being funny.
I know, she really is. And just keeping it light, you know, but that's why you like a Tessa Dare, is it's just like, it's going to make you feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Mm-hmm. But did it make us feel steamy?
I'm going to say warm and fuzzy still. So yeah. Like that perfect little cup.
With like, with a shortbread cookie on the side for sweetness.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Just that little sweet add.
Yes. And so our encounter counter technically was one because we had it in the epilogue. It was very peripherally, but it did describe enough that I would call it an encounter.
Well, I mean, that sometimes happens when you have an epilogue encounter.
Mm-hmm. But also it made sense again for the story. If
it ends on a courtship and like they only had one night together, I think if they jumped in bed together like the next day, would have been a little weird.
Yeah. And like, to what were they going to do? Like do it up against a tree in Hyde Park? The carriage was taken.
Yeah, in the middle of the snow. Yeah, that sounds great. Like.
No. Yeah, for sure. Oh, goodness. So we have our feminist recap.
I mean, it literally, there's a line in the beginning about how the daughters were raised to speak their mind and they were given an education.
Yeah.
And like that was encouraged by the family. And then James doesn't discourage that. So support her.
For sure. And you've got like these, yeah, super supportive father, sister, mother, everybody. Yeah. Like it's a happy family. And yeah, that's what we see because we only see a very little bit. And mm-hmm. It's either the interaction between Louisa and James, or the interaction between Louisa's family. Oh, actually, Fiona, when she eloped, you know, her mother was already like prepping the nursery. Even they weren't even mad. They were like, okay, like,
oh, that's true. Yeah, they're just like, okay, fine.
Yeah, we're just excited she's getting married, and like, you know, that we'll support her. So there was another supportive thing.
There you go.
Yeah. So I give this one a supporter too. Duh, it's a Tessa Dare.
Yeah. All right, Zoe, our final book rating.
So I, again, do not feel like there's really much more that I could want out of a novella. It's funny. It's mm-hmm. a complete story in one thing. It mm-hmm. has great lines of dialogue, great character development. And it's just like a perfect encapsulated thing here. But for whatever reason, I still don't quite feel like it's a perfect 10, just maybe mm-hmm. because it's short or whatever. I don't know. I feel like this book is a 9. Like, I think this is such a good book, but
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, it's like,
that was literally the number that popped into my head. 9. It's cute. It's quaint. Did I enjoy reading it? Yes. Like, would I read it again? Yes. And I mean, like I said, but, you know, it's not a perfect 10, but that's okay.
I mean, it's so close, though. It's so good.
It really is.
There's nothing else more I want from it. And I feel bad when I say, like, there's nothing else I want from it, but the most it is a 9, you know?
But the thing is, for us, 10s for us give us that extra little, like, je ne sais quoi.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And like, again, this is subjective. And
oh, yeah. I mean, who are we?
Yeah.
We're two people who like chatting about books. Like, that's all we are.
So true. But what a gift this book is. It's such a small slice of happiness. And so, like, thanks, Tessa. I can't always wait for your next Tessa. Two books. I'm very excited.
I'm really excited. Girl Meets Duke. Ready for it.
And I know. Yeah. And it's going to be great when it's here. And we'll wait patiently until you're ready.
Sort of patiently on my part.
So we're not going to be back next week. We're going to be taking a little break over the holidays, but we are going to be back in the new year. So Kelsey, you want to tell our listeners what we're going to be doing when we come back?
Yes. As we have now established with our tradition as of last year, because, you know, we're not that old. We are back in the new year with 21 historical romances we just can't wait for in 2021.
Woo! We already know what two of them are.
There you go. Check them off.
Yeah. So we're going to be looking, compiling a list for all of those. And we'd love to hear from you guys. If you guys have some books you know are coming out next year that you'd love to see highlighted on the list, get in touch with us. Instagram, Twitter, email, all those places. Oh, yeah.
You got to tell us so we can tell everybody else. That's how it works, guys. Yes. We're a community.
And you've got a few weeks because we will be recording that in real time. We'll be back to a la minute recording. We don't record quite that close. But you've got a couple of weeks to let us know. So once you hear this, hit us up.
Absolutely.
So thank you all so much for listening all year long. We've done it, I'm going to say, because it's the last of our recordings for 2020. Wishing everybody a very happy new year and a better 2021. So join us next time for our 21 historical romances we just can't wait for in 2021.
And may all your ever afters end happily.
Tea and Strumpets is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.